And Alan Taylor with us as we're talking about cars. He's the award-winning radio and television host. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We will come back in a moment and take your phone calls. Plus, share your automobile stories with us, something strange. And what was your favorite car when you were growing up? Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Our special guest, Alan Taylor. Of course, Alan, what has been your favorite car all your life?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've probably owned maybe 5,000 cars.
Have you really?
Well, I've been a car dealer, so it's not quite
fair. Okay. All right. I get it.
But I do have a special car that I got. There's this man named Carroll Shelby who's no longer with us. He was an amazing entrepreneur. He was a chicken farmer. He was a race car driver and builder, and he inspired so many Americans. And with what he did with Shelby Mustangs, and I know, George, since you own a Mustang and you're a Ford guy as well, and you know about the Shelby Mustang. So When I got a chance to meet Carroll Shelby many, many years ago, I thought to myself, wow, Carroll Shelby. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, my dream would be to have a Shelby Mustang. So one day I interviewed him, and I asked him who his hero was. And he was, I think at the time, he was probably 83. And I said, look, I said, you know, as a car guy, I have a lot of heroes. You know, I Mario Andretti's my hero, and Carroll Shelby's my hero. And I said, but who's Carroll Shelby's hero? He says, my hero. And he thought about it for a minute, and all of a sudden, a tear came in his eye, and tear rolled down his cheek. He says, that'd be my father. His voice crackled a little bit. And I said, wow, I don't know. I don't know who your father is. I don't know anything about your father. I didn't know what to do because here I was with the great Carroll Shelby.
Yeah.
And he was being, you know, it was just sad for me. I didn't know what to do. And so I hoped that, you know, talking about his dad would get him come back. And he says, my father was a postal carrier. He was a simple man. He was a good man. He used to get mad at me all the time. He took a chainsaw one time and cut my surfboard in half because I was getting in trouble. And he told this great story. And then I didn't know exactly. I was, you know, a younger guy. I wasn't really, you know, I just didn't know what to do. So I could tell that he was a little flustered. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'd love to continue this relationship, but I've got to take a commercial break. And I was recording it, so it really I could have done whatever I wanted. I said, so we're going to come back and visit you another time and finish our story. And thank you very much. You know, I'm so proud of you for, you know, loving your dad and still having all those fond memories. As I noticed a little while ago, you said, you know, you lost your dad at 88. And I'm sorry that I didn't say my condolences because my dad's 89. And I know it's like it's so nice to have him still. But for those who lose their parents, you know, my wife lost her dad at 68.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, yeah, it's just early. But for Carroll Shelby, I made this deal with him. He says, I want to work with you after this whole thing was done. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, you sponsor my show, and I'll buy a Shelby Mustang. And I could no more afford it. I had four kids. But he sponsored my show, and I took the very first check, and I went down, and I got a Shelby Mustang convertible. I got a black Shelby GT500 in 2007. And I kept it for 7 years until he passed away. And then I needed to sell it because as when you have family, sometimes you just need money. And I actually got more for that car 7 years later than I paid for it because Carroll had passed and the value of all Shelbys went up at that moment in time. And so, I mean, he gave me a gift that when I needed it most. He returned, you know, a kindness to me by helping me out. He didn't even know that by me buying that car, he was helping me out 7 years later needing some money. So that was my favorite car.
Alan, and you were talking last hour about cars, classic cars, and the value of classic cars. What makes them so special?
I think it's what we've been talking about here. Look at you. You were talking about, you know, your relationship with your dad, your first car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I believe that our classic cars remind us of a better time in history. And it could be that it's just our personal history, a better time in life. Things were simpler. We, you know, I just think, you know, today what's going on in the world, life is complicated. And I don't think it was that complicated. My wife, I've been married 30 years, my wife that I have now. I remember, George, asking my wife if I could hold her hand on a date. and it was in a car. and it was funny because I had a manual transmission, and I said, "Can I hold your hand?" She said, "Sure." So I hold it. And guess what? I had to shift gears, so I had to let go and shift the gear. And then we laughed about that. I will never forget that. That was 34 years ago when we first started dating. So I think that we love our classic cars because they take us back to a simpler, better time or a happier time in our life. And therefore, we are willing to pay whatever the heck we have to get them. I'm looking right now for my high school car, which was a 67 Chevelle Malibu. And it was Corvette yellow. I painted it because I was a car painter. And I saw one time, and I remember thinking to myself, I'd pay anything for that car. I want that car. And that's what happens. You go to the auctions. I talked about Barrett Jackson. And my goodness gracious, when you see cars bringing $1 million, $1.5 million, $3 million, and you're like, how can that be? Well, if you've got $1 billion, that's a fingernail clipping of money. That's a couple of days' interest on your money. So at that point, money isn't the issue. It's having that memory back and feeling that feeling for a few more moments in your life.
Let's go to the phones now. We will pick it up by going to Lulu in Iowa, east of the Rockies. Hi, Lulu. Go ahead.
Hi. Ford Torino Cobra 69.
Ah, mine was a 71. Great cars, though, huh?
Oh, my gosh. And I had two St. Bernards. And one would ride in the front seat, one would ride in the back. And when I would stop, crack the windows, tell them to guard, and the other one would get in the front seat, and I'd come out, and there'd be a crowd of people around the car, and I was never sure if it was for the car or for the dogs.
Lulu, do you feel like did you see the movie Gran Torino with Clint Eastwood?
No.
Oh, well, now you got to go rent it.
Oh,
it's
no.
All about his car, his love affair with his car.
With his Torino. Oh, no. That's right.
And then there was the 58 Porsche. Oh, my God.
That was something. And that was a stick shift or what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I have gone through a lot of good cars, and I'd kill to have them all back.
See? Right there. She says, it's so true.
Great cars. What is it about foreign cars, Alan, that so many people have that love affair with?
You know, Lulu said it right there. She had a Torino and she had a Porsche. German cars and Porsches in particular were known for their incredible engineering. And they're just, you know, everything about the fit and finish and the design. If you look at Porsches through the years, they haven't, you know, had giant changes. The 911 is a perfect example. The very first 911 and today's 911, you see the resemblance. It's there right in front of your face. It's tiny little refinements, and it gets better and better and better and better. Where American cars had these giant undulations of big, giant, fat cars and little, skinny, small cars, and, you know, the engineering wasn't so fantastic, but, you know, it worked. So I think that there's a certain amount of, you know, love affair with, you know, the European cars, the dream of going to Paris and, you know, renting a French car or something like that, or driving one in the countryside. And so I think that a lot of it is just all in our head. It's dreams, and it's what we make of it. It's our own perception of what we get out of that car. But to a car guy or a car gal, and it sounds like Lulu was one, it could be that, you know, it had something special for her, you know, that the car, a boyfriend or a husband or whoever it was. So I don't know. For me personally, I love the design of Italian cars and German cars. I think they just had wonderful designs. And even perfect example is the Jaguar XKE. Enzo Ferrari said it was the most beautiful car in the world. Enzo Ferrari said that about a Jaguar. And
does Ford, you know, still own Jaguar, or did they sell it?
No, they sold it.
They sold it.
Yep. It's actually owned by Tata right now, an Indian company, and they're doing a wonderful job.
Now, Tata's the one that runs on compressed air, right?
Well, Tata is a multi-billionaire. His name, I can't think of his first name. It's Ratan Tata. And he has a lot of companies. But what he did is he bought Jaguar and Land Rover. And then he basically said, do what you do best. And has allowed them and enabled them with his money to continue to evolve that company into what it is today. If you look at J.D. Power & Associates, J.D. Power & Associates, for those who don't know, is the voice of the customer. When you buy a brand new car, you get a little thing in the mail a few months later that says, so how was the initial quality? there is the initial quality studies that they do. So everybody that buys a new car gets a little thing in the mail that asks you a handful of questions, and then they get rated by that. And then 6 months, 8 months, 10, you know, a year later, how is the quality at a year? And they keep asking all these questions. And so you are the one that tells people about initial quality and owner satisfaction and all these things. And right now, Jaguar's ranking, they could be first. I think they were first for a while, but it was not too long ago that Lucas, the electrical systems were, the Prince of Darkness was Lucas, and that was what it was. And they didn't have real great, engines and transmissions and what have you. Today, boy, they're the mark of excellence, Jaguar and Land Rover too. They're doing a great job.
What do you think of Tesla cars?
I think Tesla makes a wonderful car, and I think that he was way ahead of his time. And I think that Tesla, Elon Musk is going to wow us a number of times in his life. And he's a very charismatic man. I've never met him. I've been a study of his, but I've never met him in person. But everybody that I've met that does know him and has met him say that he's just an amazing human being.
He's electrifying.
Yeah, I think the cars are fabulous.
Have you driven one?
Oh, yes. I've driven them a number of times.
Are they quiet?
They're wonderful. Quiet as can be. Matter of fact, they have to pipe in sound because they're a little too quiet. It comes numb.
It's like you're flying on air or driving on air.
Yeah. Fast as woo, I'll tell you what.
If they get those prices down, they'll sell a lot of them.
Well, that's their next one. It's going to be coming out soon. It'll be very well priced.
Next up, let's go to Les in Alaska. Hey, Les, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I am really happy to hear you on Mr. Norrie's program tonight after the election to make everyone feel like American again.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, seriously. My father was, his favorite car was the Malibu of the 60s era, same as yours, and it was always his favorite. But my favorite is the 1973 Chevy Caprice Classic, hardtop, four-door, 400
solid car. Power. Yeah.
Yes. Wow.
And he gave that to me. He gave that to me. He sold it to me, technically, at 17 years old to make sure I was safe, but he also instructed me properly, like you were talking about before, too.
Right.
And Mr. Norrie, thank you for your service.
Thank you,
brother.
Les.
Here.
thank you. You too.
Also, So I was 18 years old when I got pulled over in that Chevy Caprice Classic, and we ended up just popping the hood and talking about the engine because I was screeching my tires at a green light, and it was just talking about what's under the hood, and I said I don't really know, and the police officer actually told me more about the car too.
Brings back memories, doesn't it?
Great story. Great story, Les.
Yeah, thank you. Also, let me get back to the first story that you told Mr. Norrie about your dad finding you with the car wreck that you had. And I have a question for Alan after this story real quick. Is that my dad worked nights, and he was a hard worker, and he drove a little Toyota Corolla two-door hatchback.
Those were little cars.
Yes, and it was manual transmission. And I was barely 15 years old before I learned how to drive it. And I was 17 when I learned how to steal it because he worked nights. So he was sleeping during the day. And it took me a long time to take the keys out of his pocket. And I would pop it in neutral and coast down the hill. And when I got to the bottom of the hill, that's how I learned how to drive a stick shift.
You pop the clutch, yeah.
Yeah, most kids won't learn that nowadays, which is good because, I stole my dad's car a couple times, so now that I have a son.
Okay, hold it. I got to know. George, did you ever steal your dad's car?
No, but I'll tell you a story about my daughter in a minute as soon as Les is done.
Okay. So, this is where my question is going to – I have a question for Alan about this after. So I used to pop it into neutral and coast down the hill, and that's how I learned how to drive a stick shift and how to steal my dad's car because he was sleeping during the day, unfortunately.
Okay.
God bless his soul, And so my question is, when the future, my son growing up might not even really care to drive stick shift or care to drive so much. You were talking about autonomous driving and that sort of thing. So where is the next step? Because I believe, you know, being raised a Catholic, I'm kind of superstitious that I reap what I sow. And so as far as my kids stealing my car, what do you think is the next generation? Because if they don't have the key and they don't have the thumbprint, they might not be able to start it.
I think, by the way, there's a video game called Grand Theft Auto. Just let him play that.
Yeah, there is. Exactly. They'll know what to do.
Les is talking about the sins of the father or the sins of the son. I don't think that's the way it goes. I think that, you know, each one of us, Les, you know, we have to deal with all of our own craziness that we did when we were young. And our kids aren't going to make that same exact, you know, of course, unless you teach them how to steal the car and then they go do it, that's different. But, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, when your son, I don't know how old he is, but when he grows up, it's going to be a whole heck of a lot harder for him to steal anything unless it's a classic car. That's all there is to it.
When I was in my 20s, I was a producer, made my way as a television news director, Alan, and I'm in St. Louis, and I would work late. We had a 10 o'clock newscast, and I'd get home about 11 o'clock, 11:30. I was there most of the time. So by the time I got home, obviously, my wife was asleep and my kids were asleep. And I got home one day, and the garage door was closed. I opened it up, and our Jeep Cherokee was gone. And I'm going, either she's out or something's really wrong here.
Right.
So I go in the house, and the wife is asleep. And I wake her up, and I said, Cindy, where's the car? And she said, what do you mean? And I said, the car's gone. And we went looking, and the first thing we went into the bedroom of our second daughter, the one who was 13 at the time, and she's not there.
Uh-oh.
And I go, this can't be. And then the cops come to our house.
Oh, no, George.
And they have stopped her about a half a mile away.
Oh, my God.
Driving around at 11:30 at night. And she's there just sitting behind the wheel. And this is in suburban St. Louis, Chesterfield at the time. And the cop said, what do you want us to do? And I went, really, honestly, take her to jail and let her stay there for the night. And they
you
did.
Didn't. Oh,
they
my
did.
Gosh.
And she learned her lesson.
Oh, my gosh, good for you. That's what my dad did, the same thing. I popped a wheelie. I had a Toyota Land Cruiser with a big V8 engine in it, and I popped a wheelie. This is not easy to make a car pop a wheelie, and even harder to make a four-wheel drive pop a wheelie. And the cops pulled me over. My dad says, take him to jail. And I said,
Dad,
away. No.
But they learn. We're going to come back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Alan Taylor with us. It's our final segment with your calls. I love the James Bond movies, Alan, when they always show him in those cars.
Aston Martin.
Yeah. What's love so it. Special about those cars?
You know, you haven't asked me what is my favorite car. It's, I guess maybe you did, as my Mustang, but one that I haven't owned. It would be an Aston Martin.
As much as you've owned 5 million, I don't know what we would, but it would be the Aston, huh?
You know, Aston Martins are just so beautiful, everything about them. And I happen to know a designer, Ian Callum, who designed many of them, now is the head of global design for Jaguar. And you see, if you look at the Jaguars, they're just beautiful. And if you look closely, you see that there's a family resemblance to the Aston Martins, the F-type anyway, I'm talking about the sports cars. But Jaguar, they're beautiful. I would love to have an F-type Jaguar as well. But Aston Martin, there's just something so, you know, they're handmade. They're just, I don't know. It takes your breath away.
They're
so
British, whatever, right? British made.
They're British made. And they're wonderful machines. They're very expensive. You know, they start at about $120,000 and go up to $250,000, depending on which one you get. But I think, you know, when you drive in one, you notice every little tiny bit of everything is just delicious. So, and the fact that James Bond always drove one, he just put, he put, you know, fairy dust on it or something. You know, I don't know what it is. It's just, I don't know anybody that doesn't love an Aston Martin, the design and the look and the style and the drive.
Old Sam Walton from Walmart drove his old beat-up pickup truck, and he was happy, content, and everything else.
Yep. Well, you know, I drive a pickup truck. Somebody asked me on my show one time, they said, if Jesus was here today, what would Jesus drive? I said, well, think about it. He was a carpenter. He'd probably have a pickup truck with a lumber rack. And I drive a pickup truck. I love my truck.
As long as you don't have a shotgun rack in the back seat.
Well, if you live in the country, even that's okay.
All right, let's take the calls as they continue to roll in. Tim is in Southern California now. First-time caller. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I appreciate it. And I stumbled across your show about 3 years ago and been a huge fan ever since.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You guys are talking about trucks. My first truck was a 55 Ford pickup truck, and I absolutely loved that pickup truck. Drove it all through high school and then end up selling it for a 1967 Camaro RSSS.
Both cars, great cars, the truck Ooh. And that.
Yeah.
Oh, they're great. But I finally own the car I've always wanted. I have a 1934 Ford two-door sedan.
Wow.
That's the car that Bonnie and Clyde were.
I was going to say, does it still have the bullet holes in the door?
No bullet holes in the door, but I absolutely. Every time I get in the car, it's like a little time capsule. It takes me back in time, makes me feel like a kid again, and I just absolutely. I just love the car, and it's going to go to my kids who are going to inherit it. The story behind the car was there was a gentleman who owned it in the 60s, and he was drag racing it at Colton and Riverside Raceway here in Southern California. And he was going to freshen up the motor, and he stuck it into a shed, and there it sat for 30 years.
Oh, so my.
My father-in-law, chased this car for 30 years. About every 5 years, he'd go over to his house. Huh. You know, and the guy's name was Shorty. Say, Shorty, you interested in selling that car? Nope. Wasn't going to sell it. After 30 years, he passed away. And his wife called us up one day and asked us if we were still interested in it. And we went over, unburied it out of the shed, brought it home, spent 2 years restoring the car, and enjoyed it ever since.
How much did you have to give for it? I'm curious.
We gave $5,000 for the car.
That's a pretty good price for them.
Yeah, it's a good price. Really good deal.
Heavy chrome bumpers, right?
Yes, absolutely. Steel. The whole car is steel. We left the patina on the car the way it was from in the 60s, because in the 60s, metal flake paint was real big at the drag strip. So they had it's painted like a metal flake kind of gold on the fenders and the top. And like a pearl beige on the doors and the hood and the back of the car, but it was set up like a gasser, and we had to strip the whole car down and make it street worthy because it was just strictly a drag racer. But it's just we just enjoyed it ever since. I take it out all the time, and it's no matter where we drive it, we drive down the road, people taking pictures, like a celebrity.
What kind of tires do you have on it, Tim?
I had the wheels custom made by a company out in Orange County, and they're called Steelies. They're basically the old style steel rim with a chrome beauty ring around the outside,
yeah.
And a chrome center cap. It says Ford on it, and but it's basically set up like a hot rod. It's not a stock car, but we left, like I said, the patina and interior the way it was from the 60s, so it's like a time capsule from the 60s for us.
I love it. Tim, thanks for the story. Remember the old white wall tires, Alan? Do they even make them anymore?
Well, you know, a good friend of mine, Corky Coker, has a Coker tire company. It's called Coker Tire. It's out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And what he did is he licensed all those styles of old tires, the old red line tires and the white wall tires. And he takes today's new radial technology, and he makes them look like old tires, but they have today's safer radial technology instead of the bias ply. So for those hot rodders or anybody that wants to have a classic looking tire, Coker Tire, it's awesome.
When did cars start getting air conditioning?
Oh, gosh. I think that was probably late 40s.
What a luxury that must have been.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there was a few even before that, but not to the general public. You know, it's funny. He blew past a bunch of words that I don't think many people really thought much about when he said it was a gasser. Well, like he said, it was a drag car. You know, a gasser was a style of drag car. And he says the whole thing's metal because they make a lot of these fiberglass
very
bodies.
Heavy, right?
Right, very heavy, and but the fact that it's metal means that it's an original car instead of a fiberglass body. And then patina, he's talking about the patina. There's a new thing. Well, some people call them rat rods when they're just ratty and rusty and old, and they just bolt things all over them and make them look really cool. But to have a patina that you leave it that way is because it just looks cool that it looks old, you know? So just some words I thought I'd just help people figure out what he was talking about.
Okay, let's go to Horatio in Maryland on the wild card line. Horatio, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I used to own an old Pontiac 1968. It's a Catalina. It's a big showboat.
Oh, those were the big ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm only 5'3". So, you know, I mean, this guy has a couch up front. Pretty much, you know what I mean? I have shifted all up front. You know what I mean? All you can see is the top of my head and two hands driving it. So, you know, every time, you know, I drive everywhere and a police officer drives, pulls me over and thinking I'm a little 13-year-old kid driving right. My dad's car. And I loved it. You know what I mean? It's a great car. My friends love it because they're all 6'5", 300-pound guys. And they love to spread out in the back seat.
Great cars.
I love it.
Thanks. Thanks for that story.
Catalina.
Back in 1981, Alan, I owned a 1967, I bought it really used, Cadillac DeVille. And I would use it to drill because I was in the Navy. So I'd pick up guys, I'd pick up my buddies, and we'd go in and drill in our Navy weekend. But what a car. I mean, huge.
Oh, yeah.
With those fins. And
those were just such fun cars to drive. They didn't corner for beans, but, boy, straight down the road, comfortable as a, like he says, you're driving a big couch.
So,
you know, it's funny. I'm listening to all these stories, and I think, you know, you and I are car guys, and a lot of these folks listening are car guys. And everywhere I go, I try and work cars into everything I do. And I work with Inc. Magazine right now, which is an entrepreneur magazine. And I said to them, I said, hey, why don't we do some sort of a thing where I take somebody for a drive and we talk about, you know, how they made their success. And so I worked cars even into that. We have a video series called Driven to Success. So I work a car into everything I do, George.
That's cool. I remember taking that car and we had double dated my high school wife and I with another couple. And we must have been 28 years old or so. 29, yep. Something, 30, something like that. And so we're in this Cadillac DeVille, and it rides like a boat. It's 15 degrees out in St. Louis, and we're going home. And the wife gets sick. She had a little bit too much to drink.
Oh, no.
And she didn't feel good. And she wants me to pull over so she can go outside.
Oh, no.
And I say, it's 15 degrees. We're almost home. Just, you know, keep your mouth tight and, you know, don't, you know, get queasy on me.
Right.
And she said, no, I can't. You got to stop the car. And I didn't. And I said, look, we're 5 minutes from home. Just go rushing in the house. So
George, you can't hold that.
I know that. I found out the hard way. So keep going, right? I'm doing about 60 miles an hour. She rolls the window down, sticks her head out, and barfs. And if she's listening tonight, she's going to hate this. And all of a sudden, I hear screams, and it's like, keep
right
in mind,
in the
it's
50 seat?
The people in the back seat. It blows back there, and it freezes on them because it's so cold.
Classic.
It was just horrible. But that's my memory of this 1967 Cadillac DeVille.
You know, I will tell you that you did that to your wife. What I did to my wife was even worse. because she was going to give birth and I was selling a piece of property. I said, just come down here real quick. Or you know, she was like, it's time. And I said, come down to the attorney's office and sign these papers. And so she did. And then she went to my dad's house to drop off the other two kids. And I got there a little bit late and ended up delivering that baby on the floor of my dad's house.
Oh, that's classic. That's classic. So, well, I had the job the next morning of going out into the car to clean it, and I had to use a chisel because it was frozen.
Oh, my God.
I hope nobody's
seen cars, there's always stories. And we had a family truckster, just like Chevy Chase, the big family station wagon. And I tell you what, when I was going to get to my dad's house, because I knew I was running late, I was driving that like it was a Porsche. Those things handle pretty well if you push them pretty
hard. They sure do. Daryl in Sacramento. Go for it, Daryl. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I have a Carroll Shelby story after I tell you my favorite car.
All righty.
My favorite car has to be the GT40, the Pantera, the AC Cobra, the Sunbeam Tiger. Wow.
That's a tough car.
No. That was three cars that I heard.
Yes.
GT40.
Pantera. AC Cobra.
AC, so four
Sunbeam
cars.
Tiger.
Tiger, yeah.
And I thought it was like one model.
My dad ordered a 67 Galaxy. Top loaded full girl.
Ford Galaxy.
Fours.
Yep.
$3,800.
Oh.
I was 5 years old. This was in 1967.
$3,800.
Bench seat, top loader, side order 427. And, you know, that car, we would say bury it. It would go past 120, and the street seemed like it would just get smaller and smaller until he let off the gas.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we sold it, and I think we sold it for not enough money.
Well, if we all had the cars we had when we were young, we'd all be multimillionaires now, just so you know.
Alan, where are all those old cars we once had? Where's my 1968 Mustang right now? Where is it?
It's got a car cover on it in somebody's garage, and it's been restored twice already.
You think something like that? And
oh,
my
yeah.
Torino, and what about the Pinto? Yeah. They probably got rid of that. That had a gasoline tank problem, didn't it?
Yeah, they did. You know what? Even Pintos are getting restored these days, I'll tell you. There's nothing that is not getting restored. Station wagons, the ugliest old Rambler, Nash Rambler, crazy-looking things, they're restoring them and putting big giant engines in them, and it's quite amazing that this hot rod and classic car industry is just going crazy. And you know why? An automobile is a personal conveyance of who you are. You see people driving their cars, and when they have a classic car, a hot rod, or a custom car, it says something about them.
It does.
And they love it, and that's why they're so valuable these days.
Our friend from ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons, loves and owns a lot of old classic cars.
Yes, he does.
He's got them down in Houston. And, boy, he loves those things.
He's got a few right off Sunset. He has a place on Doheny there.
And that's right.
I did a show with him for a year called Monster Radio, and I helped him with a bunch of his cars. And he has a book we should tell everybody out called Rock and Roll Gearhead, and it's about all his cars and some of his music. And Billy Gibbons, the reverend, they call him.
Just what a great guy,
car
huh?
guy. Yep.
Billy G.
Man.
Let's see if we have time for one more quick call. Let's go to Matt in Missouri. Matt, let's squeeze you in real fast. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Thanks.
First off, thank you for taking my call. Second, thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you.
And your show. Favorite car. I mean, my dad owned a 77 Ford Bronco.
That's a great one. That's a good one.
I remember those. Those were four-wheel drive, weren't they, Ellen?
Yes,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was the 77 the first year of the bigger body?
No. It was still
it was still small.
Yeah, that was the last year of the little body. Yeah. You know, Ford's bringing back a new Bronco, I believe in 2017 or 2018, and if you Google Ford Bronco, 2017 or 18, you'll see there's renderings of it, and I believe there's some spy photos of it. So I think we'll all see a Bronco again.
We used to try to sneak pictures at the Ford Proving Grounds whenever they would be testing their new models that hadn't come out yet, and they chase us away. It was they coveted those cars, and I mean it was like Area 51. They didn't want anybody to see them at all. But what a great time! But Alan, we're out of time. Give us your website again.
It's thedrivewithalantaylor.com, the easiest one.
Simple as that. Alan, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you, George.
Seems like every 2 years you pop up.
Well, let's make it more often.
You got it. There he is, Alan Taylor, and his program, of course, is The Drive with Alan Taylor. But it's about cars. It's about cars. And you'll always remember your first real car that you got, that you bought or your dad helped you buy, and you'll never forget it ever for the rest of your life. We've got a great show in store for you tomorrow, so make sure you're part of Coast to Coast, and then we'll do it again Friday, and we're live for you Saturday and Sunday. It just keeps going. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Mike Cosio, Crystal Hill, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.